What a game that was last night. 5-1, cruise control, right? 6-5 is your final score. The Ottawa Senators, team number 31, knocks off team number 1. Good afternoon. Welcome to Hockey Central. Jeff Merrick alongside Justin Bourne and Anthony Stewart. First of all, and we're going to talk to Carolyn Roulette, by the way, four-time Olympic medalist, part of the Chevy Good Deeds Cup. We'll talk about that at the bottom and her career. Talking to that to Caro at the bottom of the hour. I want to get this out on the program early. Ultimately, I think events like last night are a good thing for a good team. And here's why. It's one of those moments where, and the next game or the next couple of games, and they're both against Ottawa, one of two things can happen. They can bloom or they can wilt. Like, that's it. They can come back and it's full pedal down for two games against Ottawa, or this can really upset their season. But one way or another, we're probably going to learn something about this Maple Leafs team come tomorrow on Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey, or on Thursday when they play the third game of this three-game series. Stewie, I know you're eating a muffin right now on our Google chat, so hold on to your muffin for one sec. Justin, we'll start with you. How did you view last night, and do you see it as a good thing, like I do, in that we're going to find out something about the Maple Leafs come Wednesday?
Yeah, they got a point. It's a really good thing. What a successful night for the Leafs. They must be ecstatic today. 3 points. Yeah, you know, there's a really interesting article Dom Lucision wrote today, which basically explained that, like, this almost never happens. A game that is that far over with, and the team coming all the way back. But oddly, when it's happened a lot to good teams. And maybe that's because only good teams get up, you know, a number of goals. But the 2010 Chicago Blackhawks gave up a very similar lead the year they won their first Stanley Cup as a group. You know, the Capitals the year after winning a Stanley Cup, the Boston Bruins last season were a very good team, you know, saw similar leads like this evaporate. And you do wonder if it isn't like some sort of reminder that no lead is safe, the pedal has to stay down, just a little slap in the face. Like, you can't, it honestly, like, when they went up 5-1, it was like both teams were like, all right, this one's in the books, so let's just everyone play shinny and see what happens. Like, the outcome is almost certainly not going to change, but let's just shinny around. The outcome did change, so not a crisis, a very weird night, but certainly it's not unprecedented in hockey history.
What do you think, Stewie?
I'm done my muffin, by the way, but this is just one of those games where you burn the tape and you get back to work, and I think that's one of the positives of a 56-game season. You're playing. You don't have to sit on this now for 3-4 days and go through the video and just, you know, get depressed about it. I think now it's a big reality check for this Maple Leafs team, who didn't really have a lot of adversity on the ice this season, and this reality check sort of brings them back to earth. And I think the one thing you realize in losing this lead is, you know, the NHL is like a heavyweight bout. It's a heavyweight championship fight where if you don't have your foot to the pedal, they can still knock you out with one punch. So if you don't come to play and you take a period off, a shift off, a game off, or a segment off, you can fall out of it. So I think you can find the positives in this, the silver lining that, hey, if you have a lead, you got to continue to do the things that got you the league. In that first half of that game, I want to know the puck possession numbers for the Ottawa Senators. They didn't even touch the puck. It wasn't even close. It looked, you know, like a National Hockey League team versus a Pee Wee team. But you got to now find a way to keep your foot on the gas. And I think it was a bit of an adjustment. I think when they were up 5-1, they made some changes on the power play units. And again, you don't want to embarrass a team, but no lead is safe in the National Hockey League, especially in COVID hockey. So I think they'll get back to the drawing board. And I feel sorry for Ottawa the next two games.
Well, I want to pause on that too, that power play question, because, you know, to your point, it's 5-1. Given the, albeit as Justin points out, freakish reality of what happened last night, like you don't see those things. You don't see a team up 5-1 lose 6-5.
That to the worst team in the league,
to the worst team in the NHL. If you're the first, like, it is a total freak. But to that point, I'm curious, Dewey, as an ex-NHLer. If you're the Maple Leafs, given that, you know, everything you've said about taking your foot off the pedal, etc., and you have a power play, Do you just go London Knights style and just keep firing out your top unit regardless of the score? Just keep sending
coming from a PP1
out there all the time?
Yeah, coming from a guy that lost 17-1 to the London Knights and seeing Corey Perry out there for a seven-minute shift. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's another story. But, yeah, you got to keep your foot on the gas. And there's not enough guys that are going that you can say, yeah, let's just take the night off. You got to find a way to get JT going. You got to find a way to get Nylander going. Mikheyev's been snake bit. So find a way to get these guys going. So you can't just say, well, let's just roll it out and just, you know, try to get some guys some cookies here and there. No, keep the foot on the gas. When it's 7-1, 8-1, then now you start double shifting the bottom six and getting them some ice time. But I think they were just a little bit lazy fare with their line changes and their matchups when the game was 5-1, which is typical for the National Hockey League. But I think now going into the next couple games, I think Sheldon Keefe's going to realize no lead is safe and we got to keep rolling. Why not keep Jumbo Joe out there, try to get him a Gordie Howe or an actual hat trick, or get Austin Matthews going, see if he can put up a four spot or a five spot as well. So foot on the gas, foot on the gas, foot on the gas. I'll pass it to you, Justin.
17? Is 17
yeah.
real?
17. I'm going to amplify
your
question,
Justin. Yeah, I think it was 17-1. Yeah.
What? 17-1 when you played Frontenac?
Yeah, we were in the second intermission. I think it was like 11, and we're trying to pull the fire alarm and get out of here. My brother's like, this is embarrassing. I'm getting thrown out, and if I don't see you guys in this dressing room getting thrown out too, you guys are a joke. And that was my brother as a rookie, so he fought and got thrown out of the game. Yeah, it was embarrassing. It was embarrassing. We should have Corey Perry in to tell that story.
I have like really distinct memories of junior hockey games where guys were like, I'm getting out of here, where guys would literally fight to get thrown out of the game so they didn't have to participate in the rest of it. What an awful experience for a junior hockey player.
You know, last night's game reminded me, and to that point about Dom Lucician and his article about when it does happen, it happens to like really heavyweight teams. I was reminded last night of an old story about Fred Shiro, the late head coach of the Philadelphia Flyers. And this is during their heyday, 74-75. You know, Flyers are running over everybody in the NHL, winning Stanley Cups. Bernie Perron is cementing a Hall of Fame career. Ditto for Bobby Clark. Like, they have like a stacked, really, you know, not just a tough team, and they were tough, but also a highly skilled team. And so they march into, I want to say it was Minnesota. I'm trying to remember how the story was told to me. I think it was Minnesota. This is when Minnesota was a really bad team in the league. And Philly goes in there, and sure enough, Justin and Stewie, they lay an egg. Like, they get whipped by a really bad team. Like, they're a really awesome team, top team in the NHL, defending Stanley Cup champions, and they're getting ragdolled because they thought this was going to be a layup. This is the two-foot putt. This is going to be simple, no problem. So the next day at practice, not a single puck hits the ice, and it's just respect this a lot more than I can. It's just an hour of down and backs essentially, and the guys are, you know, trying to catch their breath, and their tongues are hanging out, and oh man, this is awful. And they come back into the room, and Fred Shiro, who was a pretty creative guy, different dude, always wore the sunglasses, pretty revolutionary coach, used to go to Russia and work with Anatoly Tarasov in the off season. Really interesting guy. Comes into the room and he's livid about the night before. And he goes to the board and he draws a plate. And he draws three strips of bacon and puts two eggs on it as well. And he says, you know, I heard you guys last night, you're getting beat. And everyone's coming off saying, oh, I had my man, or I made a contribution on that shift. I did what I had to do. I made my contribution on that shift. And he said, I was disgusted hearing about your contributions to that game last night. He said, this is what I had for breakfast. And this tells me everything I expect out of you as a hockey player. And everybody sort of looks around the room like, what's Freddie going on about? Like, this is bacon and egg breakfast. This is supposed to teach me what I'm supposed to be as a hockey player. He said, you guys all talked about contributions. I don't want to hear about contributions. On my breakfast plate this morning, the chicken made a contribution, but the pig made a commitment. And that's what I'm looking for from my Philadelphia Flyers. You make a commitment like the pig made a commitment. The chickens make the contributions. The pigs make the commitment. And I laughed myself to sleep last night thinking of that one. But to the other point about guys looking at this and laughing it off, Let's hear from Mark Mathot, who, of course, as we all know, used to play with the Ottawa Senators, blue liner, played with Eric Carlson. Mark Mathot was on Good Show. Here's how he saw last night.
I can tell you from a player standpoint, from an organizational standpoint, not a big deal. This is something that they're going to forget about by the end of today. They're going to go in this morning, have some meetings, talk about the game last night, get some rest. And again, they're going to come out real hard tomorrow night.
Stewie, Mark Mathot says they're going to forget about it fast. True or false?
Well, this is not Ottawa and this is not Dallas. This is the biggest hockey market in the world. And we're going to be talking about it. They're going to be talking about it because it is a big deal, because this has sort of been the theme with this team the last couple years. So, but in years past, what separates this group from years past is I think they have that leadership group where they have the good mix of young guys, but they have the old guys in there that can stabilize this room. You have Jumbo Joe Thornton. I know Simmons is hurt, but he's in and out of that room every single day. You have these veteran guys that say, hey, we've been here before. We know how this goes. This is exactly what we need to do. And I think the one thing now is there's no reporters in the room. You can do your Skype interviews and give your old vanilla answers. But with this group, I don't think it's really going to affect it as years pass. In years past, it was a snowball effect where it's like, that was the first time I think in over a calendar year, I was like, oh man, here we go again. When it was 5-3 and Mikheyev missed that shorthanded opportunity, I'm like, yeah, they're probably going to lose this game because it's happened so many times in years past. So, but I think the difference is now everyone's a little year older, year wiser, and the guys that they bring in, I think it's going to help stabilize this group. They'll do their best to forget about it and move on.
Like, everything just has to go wrong for that sort of comeback to happen. Like, the goal with nine seconds left to Nick Paul is like,
Nick Paul, yeah.
That's like the exact scenario where you're like, we got to get one before the intermission. You always say to your team when you're down, just get one before you go in. You go in, all of a sudden it's a 3-goal game. It's not like 3-goal comebacks have never happened before. You're down 4 going into the third against the Leafs. It's just a different mindset. So now you're down 3. You know, they get one, you spring a guy out of the box, which, like, how often does that actually happen? Where when you're in the box, you get to step out and take a breakaway like that. Like, you fantasize it's going to happen every time. It never does, till it does. You know, everything that could go wrong did go wrong. I do think that there is that little bit of a reminder that when you get into the postseason, you know, when you're up 3-1 or 4-1, there's just never getting any comfortable. So it's a learning lesson at the right time for the team, I think.
How do you know, throw another thing in there, because you look at the game-winning goal. It's a wonderful play by Mitch Marner to keep it alive, really patient, dragging everybody along with him, feeds it back to Morgan Riley, who shoots at shin pads, and then the Ottawa Senators are off to the races. On that play, Austin Matthews is off to the side, wide open.
Yeah.
I don't know if he doesn't see him or if it's a deliberate, you know, striking off Austin Matthews, which I can't imagine any defenseman would make that choice, or if you just think, Marner just got this puck to me. It's on a tee. This thing is going in. Not thinking about, well, I'm firing at 6 shin pads here. We may be in trouble if things... I may make the smart, safe play and just feed it over to Austin Matthews. Stewie, what did you think of that final play? Obviously, the decision was wrong, the wrong one, because it led to the game-winning goal in overtime. But even just at that moment, you're Morgan Riley. Marner feeds you that in the hash marks. I get that it may feel like this one is on the tee for you, but how do you not slide it over to 34?
Well, the NHL is very, very fast, and I don't think Austin Matthews, he gave the old beaver tail, but I don't think he called for it, so I'll give him that one here, but I think he was probably still in awe by like the backhand toe drag Marner did and thought the game was over, and then he's like, oh, no, it's not, and then that puck's just coming down the pipe. You get tunnel vision. The National Hockey League is very, very fast. So I don't think in real time it's really tough to assess that and say, hey, yo, let me slide that puck over. But where was the back check? Where was the back check? But again, you live and die with your offensive guys too, but you got to give Morgan Riley credit. If you're making that pass, you're either Adam Oates or you're just Johnny Appleseed. You have to shoot that puck every single time with the game on the line. In overtime, I'm shooting the puck. You're shooting that puck. Everybody but Adam Oates is shooting that puck.
Yeah, only thing is, like, when you're the last guy back in OT, it's like you need to make sure that shot has a clear lane to get all the way through. You know, any block shots in OT when you're the last guy back are going to kill you. So, yeah, I mean, you only got a couple teammates out of there. One of them is the best goal scorer on earth. I don't know, Stewie. I feel like you got to have some awareness that he's over there. He's got two in the game. It was a tough one. But here's the bigger thing is that it's not like it doesn't speak to a bigger issue with Morgan Riley, so it's just a play. Just a moment he'd probably rather do something differently on. It's not something he consistently does.
Should we talk about the player management, though? Should we talk about the player management now going into overtime? That's the one thing I did notice, because there was a big deal about Matthews and Marner not starting OT last time.
Yeah,
so what happened, though, is they actually finished the game, and they were sort of going for the win in regulation. So they were out there for about 30, 45 seconds, and then they started OT, and they had a couple turnovers. So by then, they were gassed. So on that play now, they're going over the boards a third time. As Sheldon Keefe, I'm saying, guys, finish this game because I know you guys got no juice. So I think the game was on the line where you're going to live with the goal or die with the goal against, because, you know, two shifts in OT after finishing that that third period, they were just too gassed to even get a back check going here. So live by the goal, die by the goal.
You know, I am really fascinated with the mentality of like how you approach the 3-on-3, because it is such a different beast. And early on when the 3-on-3 first came in, it was uncoachable. And that's what I think what we all loved about it. It was guys freestyling, and the coaches said, I'm just going to put my three best guys out there and we'll see what happens. It's become more coachable. It's a more coachable experience now. But Justin, is there a discernible difference in how you behave on three? Essentially what I'm asking is, what's your job on 3-on-3 as opposed to 5-on-5? So again, I'm going to go back to that Riley situation where he takes the shot instead of sliding it over to Matthews. Would I be off the mark if I said, if I'm Morgan Riley on that shift, my job, unless I'm point blank in front, is just to feed Marner and Matthews, just wheel them the puck as often as I can?
But I think the biggest thing that changes is your focus goes from shot quantity to shot quality. So, like, you spend a lot of the game looking for shots. You're trying to find a soft spot. You're trying to get a puck to the net. Anything can happen. Crash and bang, yada, 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 all those cliches. In overtime, in 3-on-3 overtime, a shot, a just okay shot, even a good shot, is a turnover. You know, it's tough to get the puck back in overtime, so you have to value that possession and look for something that has a legitimate chance of going in the net. Now, if I'm Morgan Riley, where he's shooting from on the rink there, that's got a chance of going in the net. I can't quibble with him deciding that that's a spot he feels okay pulling the trigger. It's, you know, it's just to me that there's another better decision available to him, but that what really changes from a coaching standpoint is it's not going to be possession, 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 trade, trade, trade. Sometimes one team has the puck for 3.5 minutes in overtime, so you just have to be more selective with your looks.
What do you think, Stewie? The philosophy of OT.
I think we take for granted just how good of a passing team this is, and we see Marner making cross-team passes. We see, you know, Joe Thornton making elite passes at his age too, but there is no method to the madness now. And I remember when it first came out and we're trying to practice it and guys were just trying to go end to end and you couldn't even back check because you were so gassed. So there's no method to the madness. I know there's a lot of role plays and gathering and try to get speed, but I think it's just your top guns versus their top guns and whoever has the biggest bullets wins. So that's my analogy on 3-on-3.
Oh, by the way, someone writes in to that Shiro story. It was Pittsburgh. They beat Philly 8-2. I remember this is from CJW 1965, All Things Hockey. I was a kid and remember being so upset and bewildered they could lose so bad. Next game, they beat the Pens 8-4. So it wasn't Minnesota. All right, filling it in, that was the Pittsburgh Penguins. Thank you so much for sending that correction in. Let's play the hypothetical game here. Last night was fascinating. Even if the Maple Leafs would have won in overtime, let's say that Morgan Riley shot gets through the shin pads and through Hoberg and game's over and the Maple Leafs win. What would it feel like today if you're a Maple Leafs fan? What would it feel like if you're a Maple Leaf? Would you just say, don't critique a win and move on? Or would it feel empty somehow, Justin?
Well, this is, you know, why it's good if you're a Leafs fan that it ended the way it did, because you don't want to see them get rewarded, like go unpunished for playing like that for half a hockey game, you know, or for, sorry, a period and 9 seconds or whatever it ended up being. It would really just lead to that feeling of invincibility that doesn't even matter what we do. We still got 2 points. Ottawa's not catching us anyway. We did what we had to do. I think it's better that they missed out on a point and they actually had to take their medicine last night.
What do you think, Stewie?
Did they need to get the meme? I had the perfect meme ready to go, and it was in the drafts. It was Austin Matthews in a Van Gogh painting, because it wasn't pretty, but it's not the art business. And a 56-game season, and remember, there was no training camp. There's no exhibition games to iron out the kinks. So they've played a bunch of games this year, but they're still rusty. They haven't had adequate practice time that you have in a normal season to go. So this wasn't an X and O's loss. I understand that too, but when you don't have that repetition, you're going to be a little bit rusty on your D-zone coverage. You're going to be a little bit rusty on your penalty kill. And that's another thing too. I want to see these analytics guys on Twitter now. How many games have you won where you let in two shorthanded goals against? I don't think there's very many games too. So it's just those details that, you know, when you have practice, you can iron out those kinks. That that's part of it. It's part of it. It's early enough in the season where, hey, you know what, you just chalk it up. If this happened in game, you know, 46 or 48, I'd have a big problem. But all cylinders are pretty much rolling on this team, and until it becomes a trend, we just got to consider it a one-off and go from there.
So Marcus Hogberg does end up making the save, doesn't get through the shin pads, and the Ottawa Senators win. Now, two teams played really poorly last night. They just played poorly at different times of the evening. One played really poorly early, and the other played really poorly late. Does any of this carry over to Wednesday? I know it's going to be in the back of everybody's mind, but is there anything, I mean, Stewie already said, like, listen, foot on the gas, keep it there. PP1 keeps rolling out 6-1, 7-1, or 2-1. That's the way you have to do it in the NHL right now. Don't worry about things like sportsmanship or not embarrassing your opponent. Just keep strangling. Is there anything, Justin, that you think carries over?
Yeah, I think this leads to a better start from the Leafs. And not that they had a bad start last game. As Stewie said, they were awesome in the first. I expect more of the same on Wednesday. You know, like, if they go out there, they play well for a couple of periods, and they hang on. They squeak by 5-4, win 6-5 in OT. Like, do they really have to come out on Wednesday and play well? Like, if one period or two periods is enough to beat Ottawa? Like, this, to me, was added incentive for the Leafs to keep the pedal down. My expectation of 4 points over Wednesday and Thursday is pretty much set in stone at this point.
What do you think, Stewie?
You just got to hit that reset button, and until it becomes a trend. And I know we're in this market where we got to microanalyze too, but I like where this team is at this point of the season. And again, they have some injury problems here and there, but we just got to wait to see. And I think the start is going to be the key to next game, to see exactly how they've really handled the situation. But if I'm Sheldon Keefe, I go in there, we have a regular day, you say, hey guys, we just got to pull up our pants here and play some long pants hockey, as Berkey coined before he walked out the door there, and just get back to it. Because say what you want, I don't care. Nobody put any money on them coming back, because that game was it was dominant performance by the Maple Leafs that first half of that game. They had a couple major brain cramps, but yeah, that's hockey. But for me, if you're putting on any money on Ottawa getting a point in these next two games, I don't know. I honestly don't think so.
Justin, you know Sheldon Keefe better than anybody, having worked with him at the Toronto Marlies, better than anybody on this show. How would he react both last night after the game and today?
Well, I can tell you, you know, from one of the comments he made, which was that's the worst he's ever felt about a 5-2 lead, he said, at intermission. So I would be shocked if he did anything other than show highlights from when they were winning. I don't think he'll be showing, you know, Zub get out of the penalty box and sprung on a breakaway or a random shorthanded goal or things that aren't consistent. Yeah. But I bet that he will go back and look at when the team felt things were going well and say, things were never going well. You know, the score was good, but this was not a place where, you know, we were too loose and I didn't like us here, here, and here. And that's a reminder for when you're up that you still have to play with the process over results and focus on the way your team is playing and not the score.
In a weird kind of way, Stewie, we'll hit break on this. Carolyn Ouellette joins us at the bottom of the hour, talking about the Good Deeds Cup and her career, which has got some really interesting twists and turns in it. As a coach, as much as you don't like it when it's happening, you don't like watching leads like that fall away. You don't like watching, here we go, there's nothing we can do about this, we're not getting the breaks, and everything is going in past Frederik Andersen. As a coach, does part of you like that? in that now you have the room's attention. Once a team crumbles like that, does that work in the favor of the coach?
Yeah, that does a little bit, right? You need these sort of like electroshock moments to grab everyone's attention, particularly when you're 11-2-1 or whatever they were before the game, 11-3-1. You know, it's slap. Pay attention here, boys. It wakes everyone up a little bit, and I think there is some value in that, Jeff. Yeah.
What do you think?
But I don't think this is like years past where, you know, Mike Keenan's coming in with a trash can and throwing it over somebody's head. This is a cohesive unit where it's not the team versus the coach or there's, hey, oh, we got to do this because the coach is being an idiot or something like that, too. I think it's a pretty good open line of communication where they know the boundaries, they know what's acceptable and they don't, and they know what's not. So the one thing is, too, I don't like the narrative where it's the Leafs thinking, ah, well, you know what, we'll just see how it goes. They're probably pretty upset with their performance, too. And again, it's a young group, but like I mentioned before, they have those stabilizers that know that this is unacceptable as a group, and they're going to respond. So until they don't respond, I think we got to give them the benefit of the doubt just based on their body of work this season right now with their record.
You know who you got to give it to as we go to break that we really haven't? Give it to those Ottawa Senators players. I know it was just like to your point,
yeah,
Justin,
absolutely.
It's like, hey, let's just play pond hockey and see what happens. I don't know about you guys, not surprised that it was Nick Paul that got that goal. Nick Paul, who is
he's been
fantastic this year. Listen, he's a product of a really good battalion program led by Stan Butler when Nick Paul was there. Every time I see Nick Paul, I think about Stan Butler and the work that he did with him on that battalion team. Barkley Goodrow was on that team as well. No surprise that, to your point, Justin, like just get one before the period, that it was him. That's Nick Paul, man.
What about the Brady Tkachuk fight there? We were giving Wayne Simmonds all the credit for the fight that sparked the comeback. What about the Brady Tkachuk getting in the Leafs' kitchen?
Didn't like Jake Muzzin flipping the puck at his brother? Is that what you're saying? Now he's fighting. He's settling scores for the Calgary Flames?
I never even thought of that. That's a hell of a connection, Jeff. They probably talked about Muzz before. That's an interesting overlap. Yeah, I bet that actually did kind of play into it a little bit. But I will say the Senators of old didn't have the horses to do this at all. Like the goal they score... you know, Stutzla to Batherson, buries it on his backhand, sweet goal. Like, they got some guys who can play here. They signed Dadonov, who was a big part in the comeback. At least they have a couple of guys that if you open the door, they can do something. It feels like it's been a while since they've had that.
Absolutely. With that, we got to hit a break. Carolyn Roulette will join us, a four-time Olympic medalist. We'll stop by. We will be talking about the Chevy Good Deeds Cup, but also her career. And there are so many great and interesting and at times controversial stories involving her and the Sochi Games. Not just the games itself or the gold medal, but the captaincy, Kevin Dineen coming in, how the captaincy was given to her, how she felt about it. Was it too late? Fascinating stuff. Oh, and one of the great stories is when Kevin Dineen took over because he came in really not knowing anyone at all. And this takes us all back, Stewie. This takes us all back, Justin, to Tim Bitts Hockey, the Canadian national team, having to put their names on the fronts of their helmets so the coach could tell who they were. All this when Carolyn Roulette joins us here in a couple of moments. Hockey Central continues. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Five games on the go this evening around the NHL. Eyes on Brian Burke's Pittsburgh Penguins, and they can they make it three in a row with the new management structure of Brian Burke and Ron Hextall? Welcome back to Hockey Central. You can watch that game, by the way, on Sportsnet 360. Jeff Merrick alongside Anthony Stewart and Justin Bourne. It's time for Canada to vote and get this down to three. We're talking about the Chevy Good Deeds Cup, and here is one of their ambassadors joining us on Hockey Central, four-time Olympic gold medalist, the great, as the Hockey Hall of Fame awaits, Carolyn Ouellette. Carolyn, thanks so much for stopping by. How are you today?
Hi, guys. I'm very well. Thank you.
Listen, it's a real delight having you on. It is a real pleasure. We're asking Canada to vote now and get the Chevy Good Deeds Cup down to three. Why is this one of particular importance for you?
Well, I love this program. I think that as I've been so fortunate to experience so many great moments as a hockey player, being able to represent Canada. And I think with that came the responsibility of giving back to my community, of doing all that I could to inspire young girls to find a sport that they love or to even try hockey. And this is already our fifth season with the Chevrolet Good Deeds Cup. As you know, this year is a bit different, so we had to adjust, and it became the Chevrolet Good Deeds Pitch. So we asked teams at the under 11, under 13, and under 15 levels to pitch their idea of a good deed that could greatly help their community.
The voting, by the way, opened on February the 13th. It closes on the 24th. You can check ChevroletGoodDeedsCup.ca to vote for your favorite good deed, as Carolyn mentions, idea. You know, one of the things that I've always found interesting about you, outside of the playing and the gold medals, and I do want to get to Sochi. I'm going to hand this off to Stewie and Justin in a second. I want to ask you about one thing that I know you're particularly passionate about and that you have done, and I think is quite remarkable. I don't know how many years you've done it, but at the Quebec Pee Wee Tournament, which is a legendary hockey tournament that goes back decades, and it's almost like a who's who of people in the NHL have all played in the Quebec Pee Wee Tournament at some point. You take a collection of all-star girls to that tournament, I believe, every season. I know you made it to the semifinals not too long ago, a few seasons ago. Can you talk to us a little bit about what you've been able to put together for these all-star girls and taking them to that prestigious tournament?
Well, thank you so much for bringing that up. That is actually one of my proudest achievements. I started a tournament a few years back. Wanted to inspire more girls to try hockey. So we have a Try Hockey for Free program. We have a tournament. So it's around 2,000 people that come to our event. And in the end, we do select the 19 best under 13 female players from Quebec. They come from female hockey, from boys hockey. And we have the great privilege of taking them to the prestigious Quebec International Pee Wee Tournament. And as you know, I've experienced some pretty incredible moments with Team Canada. But this is a very special tournament. And so many of those young girls have told us, you know, I never thought that I could come to this tournament. So I'm very thankful for the tournament to let us participate every year. And obviously, we want to do well because it's a great opportunity to showcase girls hockey. And it's become, to be honest, a real dream in the province of Quebec to make this provincial team. And, you know, if I look at the Chevrolet Good Deeds Cup this year, they are just as many girls' team as boys' team. And I think, you know, the more visibility we can give to girls in hockey, the more they will be interested in the sport. And in your province of Ontario, the London develops, you know, they created a great video with a great idea. They want to partner with the Canadian Training Institute to make hockey more inclusive by specifically supporting young Black girls in hockey and creating a community of role models for them, which is absolutely great. And this is what it's all about.
That's awesome. Are there any names from any of your teams at the Quebec tournament that have gone on maybe to play with the national team, play at a high level? Anyone we should be aware of, Carol?
Yes, there's actually already a few girls that have made the provincial team. One of my goaltender, the first year we had the team at the Pee Wee Tournament, she is actually now playing for the University of Wisconsin in the NCAA. And that was a girl that debated about quitting hockey before she was part of our experience. She felt lonely in hockey. She was the only girl on our team. And Kim St. Pierre, my goalie coach and great friend, saw so much potential in her. And that experience playing with girls and gaining self-confidence really transformed her career. And today, I'm still very close with her. She comes and helps out at my camp. She's developed a passion for coaching as well and understanding that already in college, you're great role models for young girls.
That's awesome. Stewie.
Yeah, you have an incredible resume with 10 gold medals, 4 at the Olympics. I wanted to ask, which one of those Olympic gold medals is the nearest and dearest to you?
Hmm.
Hi, Stewie. It's a great pleasure speaking with you. They're all very special, I think. You know, but I think the first one, it's a moment you'll never forget, and being able to be in Salt Lake City on American soil, playing in a final for an Olympic gold medal after we had lost 8 games to the American, where not many people thought we could do it. In that game, we had 13 straight penalties, 8 in a row, so we spent almost half the game down a player. So being able to show the resiliency to come back and win that game is certainly very special for me. And it's really motivated me to want to go back to the Olympics and be able to experience that again. If lastly I can add, I think the Sochi Olympic Games, just the dramatic fashion in which we won after trailing down by two goals so late in the game. That was a bit of like a movie, you know, the puck going down and hitting the post and us coming back down the other way and scoring to tie the game. I think every Canadian pretty much knows where they were and what they were doing when that happened. So that's so special in itself.
Yeah, I know where I was because I had a story written and it hit the post. You guys went down, scored, and I had to rewrite my whole story. Thanks a lot for that. But it was great as a Canadian to see it happen. It was honestly just a fantastic finish there. The one thing that I'm very, you know, I just wish I were more worldly. And getting to go to 4 different Olympic Games sounds like an unbelievable experience off the ice as well. Is there anything that stands out to you of your 4 different experiences, you know, with the players in the villages, away from the rink, that stands out over those years?
For sure, and that's very simple. Vancouver. You know, sure. I didn't yet speak about this one, but I think every Olympian dreams of going to the Olympic Games, but when you get the opportunity to go in your own country and play in front of your fans, and especially I would say in the sport of hockey, you know, we love to say it's our national pastime. We just felt so much support, so much love. And, you know, when I went a few days after Olympic gold medal game to watch the men's team do the same, just seeing the sea of Canadian jerseys, red and white everywhere, it was just so special and a moment I'll never forget. Being able to be with Canada's best athlete in every sport in the village is something truly, truly special. Being able to go see some of them compete or watch them on television as we're in the Olympics and cheering them on. I'll never forget Kaylee Humphries and Heather Moyes winning gold right before our final and really inspiring us in Sochi. So that's another example of how athletes can elevate one another during the Olympic Games. We are part of a bigger team, which is the Canadian delegation.
With Caroline Ouellette, 4-time gold medalist in the Olympics, as Dewey mentions, 10-time gold medalist altogether. And you mentioned Sochi, and I do want to get there. And you became captain just before the tournament, and I know that was like there's an interesting symmetry in national team captains in women's hockey. I know you were a big fan of France Saint-Louis, and she was a captain of the national team. You became the captain, and now Marie-Philippe Poulin. You were Marie-Philippe Poulin's hero as well. So there's a real symmetry there. But take us back. I believe it was only a month before the Sochi Games. I can remember there was a lot of controversy around Team Canada. Kevin Dineen came in as the new head coach. I know you guys had to put, you know, tape on your helmets and write your name so the coach could see who he was talking to. What are your memories of becoming captain that close to the Olympic Games in Russia?
Well, I love how much you know about what happened that season, and it is pretty crazy. You know, people just remember the final game, but that season was really a roller coaster. And I think if you ask any player that was part of that team, it was definitely the most difficult season physically and emotionally. It started really well. We won 4 games against the U.S., but then we started to lose. We couldn't find ways to score goals. We our coach resigned, and all throughout the season, we had alternated between captains. So several different players were the C, were assistant captains. We were rebuilding in so many ways. And yes, Kevin Dineen came in. He had never coached women. He didn't know many of us. And to be honest, that became an asset because he didn't care if you had played on the team for 12 years or for 2 years. You had to prove yourself, and you had to prove that you could perform, you could execute. And I really, really loved him. He didn't come in trying to change everything. He worked really well with our assistant coach, Lisa Ailey, and Daniel Goyette, who had been with us for the whole season. And he made some little change here and there and gave us a lot of rest because we were totally exhausted, both mentally and physically. Marie-Philippe Poulin, who ended up being our hero, as you know, she was injured for most of the season. Even in Sochi, she was still very hurt, and she played through the pain. A true hero in all aspects of the term. But yeah, that was truly a surprise for me. I remember we were about to go on the ice for practice, and he asked to speak to me, and it's, we're next to the rink, we're about to go in, and I come, and I'm expecting to be an assistant captain. I've been assistant captain since the 2010 season, even before 2007 season, and I've been very proud and thankful to be in that role. And I always remember he said, "We will take your A on your jersey and we will put a C." And I know I was in total shock because it is a big change, and it's for sure a big sense of pride to become captain, but it's tough to replace someone that's still on the team. But from the support that I receive from my teammates, I knew I didn't need to change. I just needed to keep being who I was and doing what I was doing, and that's what the team needed.
Let me ask you, as we conclude, I'm always curious about how Kevin Dineen changed the way you and your team played. And I remember asking him about it, and the only thing that he would tell me is, he said, "I started getting them to break the puck out up the middle." And I remember watching that U.S. game and saying, you know, Canada's doing everything up the middle in their own zone, and that's rare. We really hadn't seen that. What else did Kevin Dineen do to your game that allowed you guys to be victorious in Sochi?
Yeah, many things. He was one of the most powerful and inspirational leader that I had the opportunity to be coached by. But he was also very honest, which was very refreshing. But I think he gave us a lot of confidence in the sense that he wanted us to be creative and being able to break out in the middle, to use cross and drop, cross and keep. I think we had been a really north-south team until him, and he really brought that creativity and that, you know, if you want to have high rewards, you got to risk high. And by doing so, you can still be very responsible defensively. So I think he inspired all of us to add a bit of magic in our game while still staying very courageous defensively, blocking shots, executing the little details of the game that we needed to do. But the rivalry with the Americans, it's such a close one, right? That was the ninth game between the two countries in Sochi in the final game, and it was 4-4. So it doesn't get much better than that. We could play each other 12 times, and who knows? You know, it might be 6-6, so it's pretty crazy in that sense.
Such wonderful memories, and you're still giving back. I know that that you give back, whether it's, you know, Montreal Center, whether it's, you know, girls to the Pee Wee tournament, the HP1 coaching certificate. Like, you do so much for this game, so no surprise. You're a wonderful ambassador for the Chevrolet Good Deeds Cup, and this year, as you mentioned, it's a Good Deeds idea. The voting closes February 24th. You can check out and vote yourself at ChevroletGoodDeedsCup.ca. Finalists have the chance of becoming this year's champion. That would include a $100,000 donation for their good deed idea. Carolyn Ouellette, this has been a lot of fun. We really appreciate your time today. We respect that you're very busy. You took a lot of time for us today, and we appreciate it. We look forward to catching up soon.
Thank you so much, guys.
There she is, Carolyn Ouellette, four-time Olympic gold medalist for Team Canada. It is interesting the way the captain symmetry goes from St. Louis to Ouellette to Marie-Philippe Poulin, all admiring each other on their ways up in the entire Canadian national program. We'll hit a break. I want you guys, again, to pick one game tonight that you're going to really have your eyeballs on. There's five of them around the NHL this evening. on a Tuesday night in the league. Everyone picks a game next on Hockey Central. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We got about 60 seconds here. Smith and Jones, top of the hour on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. For me, it's Caps and Penguins. Tonight, Stewie, what do you have your eyes on?
I'm going Colorado and Vegas. Battles of the starting goaltenders. Philip Grubauer, 7-3, 1.61 goals against average. But better by Marc-Andre Fleury, 7-1, 1.38. Who guessed that the Flower would be the number one guy in Vegas?
Maybe the number one guy
Catch
in the league,
tonight.
Stewie. Only one goal in the last game between these two teams. We'll see them take it at Lake Tahoe on the weekend as well. What do you got your eyeballs on, Justin? Justin Bourne, are you with us?
Oh, hello.
There you go.
I'll give the people another gambling tip, Jeff. I gave them a win yesterday.
Oh, I like this. Yeah.
Capitals. The Capitals are underdogs today. You can get them at plus 105. Take the Caps over the Pens tonight.
You don't think the Penguins can beat the Capitals in back-to-back games?
No, I don't like their odds in back-to-back games. I just feel like Capitals are too good to roll over again.
That's Berkey on line two holding for you right now, Justin Bourne. It's Caps and the Penguins at 7 o'clock Eastern. Watch that one on Sportsnet East, West, Pacific, and 360. We're back tomorrow.